Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlatnik, and today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome Mike Stoller. Hey, Mike.
How you doing, Mike?
Thanks for coming on a podcast. You said you hail from Scottsdale and you're between Scottsdale and Barcelona. And let me do a formal introduction. So Mike is a former commercial airline pilot, Navy veteran. Thank you for your service. And a co-founder of Gateway Private Equity Group, a real estate investment firm whose portfolio includes hotel, multifamily, residential properties. Between apartment complexes, houses, Mike, hotels, Mike also owns and operates over 150 units. Seeking value-add opportunities, higher returns, Mike pivoted from multifamily to hotels and now focuses exclusively on that niche. So, Mike, welcome, and let's just a couple of words about you, your family, and then we'll jump straight into the hotels, U.S., Spain, and we'll see where this journey goes.
Sure, sounds great. I'm a small-town redneck. From Indiana, and it was one of those things. Well, I could go work in the factory, or I could, you know, do something in that small town, and it just wasn't me. So, joined the Navy, and started buying properties because I knew that that was it. And back in, I call it the pre-Google days when I got started, it was easy. Bought 8 units, failed miserably because I couldn't Google how to be a landlord or what forms were there. Couldn't do anything. So failed miserably, and so shifted, became an airline pilot. You know, that was my dream. While I was an airline pilot, I started buying again, you know, because now Google came, so I could actually Google how to do things. And I got injured pretty bad while flying into Houston, and made that decision there that I could quickly and easily replace my income. So I went headfirst into real estate investing.
And when was it? When did you go real estate full time? What year?
Full time. I started in 99. I went full time in 2003, and had built up multifamily portfolio. And then I saw kind of something. You know, the prices were starting to go up in 5 and 6, and so I just held on to a lot of cash. And then 2008 came. The crash, and that's when I just started buying everything, anything and everything. Did a lot of seller financing, did a lot of bank takeovers, and that's where when I built up my portfolio. And everyone was like, oh my god, you know, I was ruined, and a lot of people were ruined during that, but not to say that I took advantage of the situation, but I bought 90% of my multifamily portfolio between 2008 and 2012 and 13.
And that's very cool. By the way, it's not, you know, you're not taking advantage of anyone. It's just kind of the market. The market cycles, mm-hmm. right? And these things do happen. And we just seen another market cycle in multifamily mm-hmm. as well. So these things do happen from time to time. And people who think there are no market cycles, they get surprised again and again. And what about hotels? When did you switch to hotels? Mm-hmm. How long have you been in that strategy, and where is the market now from the market cycle perspective?
Well, I tell you, great questions. So what happened is someone from Idaho, of all places, came in and for 4 times wanted to buy my portfolio. And I said, no, you know, I'm golfing, I'm living life. I'm, you know, I was on cruise control. Well, they came down to Phoenix area, said, Mike, I want to meet you at IHOP. And I'm like, okay. So over pancakes and coffee, they wrote a number on a napkin that I couldn't refuse. And you have to understand that I was buying at over a 10 cap, you know, during the crash. I mean, they were, and now I was selling it at a 4.5. So I had to make a decision. Do I want to take all this money, 1031 it, into more multifamily at 4.5 caps? And I said, no, you know, it didn't make sense to me. So long story short, I had a real good friend, got 25 years of hotel experience, and had coffee with him. And I said, look, explain this to me. And he goes, yeah, hotels are still 10, 12 caps. And I said, well, I have the money. You tell me how to buy them. You show me how to buy them. I want you to run those hotels for me. And if you do that, I'll give you a cut on the back end. So I wanted to make sure that he had an incentive to make me money, because then he would make money. And that was the start of it. That was about 10 years ago. And it's been pretty good and pretty bad ever since, you know, COVID, owning hotels and COVID. I would joke that I had a full head of hair prior to COVID. Then COVID hit, and, you know, I bought a hotel in November of 2019. And you know what happened just a few months later? Went from, I think, an 84% occupancy down to 7% within 4 or 5 months. And, but those types of things made me a much better hotelier, because I had to think outside of the box and see how I can make these hotels survive. All of our hotels did survive. But to your point, where's the market now? I'm seeing for the last couple of years, the sellers want 2019 prices, but the debt to service coverage ratio doesn't support it at 7-8% interest rates. So you're buying it upside down, basically, or, you know, zero net profit. So it's very hard to get into hotels in the US right now. Labor's gone up. In the last 2 years, expenses have gone up 30-35%. So it's been really, really squeezed. I'm still finding some in small towns in the Midwest, Indiana, Ohio, Georgia has some good, but it's more of the Midwest where there's not a lot of appreciation, but really, really cash flows. But what I did was, that original partner lives half the time also in Barcelona. And he said, Mike, you need to come over here and look at these places. And I kind of poo-pooed it at first. I'm like, I'm not going to do anything in Barcelona. But then I got there, and the prices, the expenses, I can make more money and pay a tenth of what it would, you know, cost. You know, for a $10 million hotel in the United States, I make a 10% return. I can make more of a return on a $1.5 million, 600-year-old castle that's been converted to a boutique hotel, because labor is down, expenses are down. You're buying at a fraction of the price. So we're concentrating in the Costa Brava region of Spain right now.
Very interesting. So you found a unique niche, I guess, part of EU that is just these boutique hotels. They exist. People go on vacation from the US, and they go on vacation from Europe. And it's a niche market. And so what kind of cap rate are you buying them at? You know, it's all relative to the price and expenses. Mm-hmm. It's all computed in the cap rate. So, of course, cost of financing now is up, but what cap rates are you getting?
Yeah, not in Spain. Financing in Spain is not up. It's absolutely crazy. So we're buying it around 15 caps.
1.5?
1.5. And to give you an idea, the one that I have an open syndication now for a 14-room boutique in a medieval town. It's in the middle of a medieval town. The whole hotel is carved out of rock and stone. It's something out of the movies. He's had a second generation. He's had it for 15 years. He's tired of it. He's not really a hotelier. He has zero website, zero marketing. He still makes 500,000 euros a year with no effort. We're buying it at 1.5 million. He's carrying 600,000 euros at 2.7% interest. So that means I have to raise, instead of the whole thing, I only have to raise $800,000. And we have something that already makes 500,000 euros. So what is that return? If I'm only raising 800,000, it already makes 500,000. It's crazy returns. But as far as the interest rates, the apartment that we bought in Barcelona, 25-year mortgage at 2.55%.
Is this real? The interest rates are that low, so you can still get these type of insane loans in Spain?
100%. Yep. We just closed on the apartment last month, 2.55%. And the commercial rates are 2.7. And they apologize that they had to charge me so high because the resident rates are even lower than that.
Wow, that's fascinating. It's something worth further research for U.S. investors. Again, now it's a different country now, the different laws, but you know it's not a third world country. I mean, Spain is a developed country, part of the EU. You're not investing in some country with this war and instability. There's a lot more stability.
Yeah, it's not Venezuela. I'm not investing in Venezuela or Colombia. And, you know, we only invest in Catalonia, which is the more capitalistic side. If you don't know, Spain is kind of two countries. You know, Catalonia has its own. That's where Barcelona is. They have their own flag. They have their own language. They have their own. They wanted to succeed from Spain because they're tired of, I don't know if it's the king, or just more of the socialistic views. They're the kind of the capitalistic side of Spain. So I will only concentrate in that. And then we concentrate in the Costa Brava region, which is right now one of the, I think, number one or number two tourist destination in the world is that region.
Yeah, that's very fascinating. And how do you find these deals over there? And how do you... how's the income taxed from Spain? You know, if you get a U.S. investor, what kind of, are they taxed on both sides? I'm just curious, is that tax treaty?
Yeah. Great question. These are questions that all of our investors ask. Number one, I have a team in Barcelona and people that live there their entire lives. Jordi has done a lot of deals for Blackstone. And so he was the one that found them, appraised them, looked at the property. So I figured, hey, Blackstone could hire him. Now he's retired. And his whole dream was to go after these old castles and these old estates. So we brought him on board. We have Vic, who does the operations. And then we have caretakers, husband and wife teams that run them. That's how we find them. It's just once you kind of get your work, name out. It's kind of like here in the U.S. You all of a sudden you get all these off-market deals from brokers, and it's kind of the same. As far as the taxes go, so how it works is we had to set up a Spanish company, Spanish LLC, get on their tax system. So we have all the day-to-day operations are run through a Spanish company. That company is owned by an American company, and that's where the investors are. There's a Spanish-American tax treaty, so there is no double taxation. All the taxes are paid by the Spanish LLC. So when I move distributions from euros to U.S. dollars to the American entity, all we have to worry about is the conversion and from euros to the U.S. And then that American LLC then distributes the distributions to the investors. So as far as your CPAs and everything's concerned, it's just an American LLC giving you money. And then you're taxed off of that. And it just becomes like an American LLC. The great thing is because there's no double taxation, there's a lot of different, we still get depreciations. You still get benefits from the K-1s. And what the investors are really liking is every time they go to Europe on vacation, now what has it become? You're going over to see a business asset. So that airfare and a lot of those expenses, if you have a good CPA, are now tax deductible.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. If people get to visit their investment, It could be a business purpose.
It
yeah, it makes sense. I looked at a tax treaties years ago, and U.S. has some really good tax treaties with most of the developed world, like, you know, UK, Australia, Germany, Spain. They all typically, you know, things are taxed on one side. Although it's different, without spending much time, I'm sure you figured it out. So these operating businesses, in most people, it's one of the concerns that I've always had in hotels, senior living facilities, car washes. They're all literally operating businesses. So real estate is only valuable if you're operating well. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's really an investment in the confidence of the of your team. I mean, you and your team operating these assets. And I assume you're a direct operator. So you basically have local staff and you're doing local marketing. How are you marketing these hotels? I'm just curious. Is it like booking.com or some other websites?
You know, great question. So certain assets, you know, one that we're looking at is a castle. And right now it is in Coastal Grove. It's the number one wedding destination. So you get a lot of marketing in like Rob reports, wedding websites, wedding destination magazines. And it's more of event planners than OTAs, which are the booking.com and Travelocity type thing. So you heavily market and you bring on these wedding destination type of event planners. Other ones that are more of a hotel, you set up a website because it's an independent property. And then the marketing is a lot of the OTAs. Here in the US, it'll be marketing companies in leisure destination magazines, partner with like American Express or the different credit cards as far as, you know, the unique destinations of the world. Because they're not cheap, you know, to stay there at night. You know,
it's a boutique niche market. That's what I'm hearing is boutique niche market, destination market. You really have to cater to very specific audience. Again, like you said, events, and it makes sense. I mean, if you want to have a wedding in a castle, that's pretty cool.
And most of the people that go to Spain don't want to stay at a Marriott or a Hilton or a regular franchise. They want to stay in a castle. They want to stay in an old estate that's in the middle of a medieval town. So you have to make sure there's a lot of SEO work on the back end to make sure that if you say castle in Spain or estate in Spain or Costa Brava, you want to be on the first page. So there's a lot of SEO and back end marketing that we do.
Yeah, it's a niche business. I mean, everything you're saying is it's a great niche business. You could be very successful at this if you've got it figured out. And now, again, age of AI. I'm just curious. Mm-hmm. And even Google search is all changing to the AI now. People are just going to be running mm-hmm. AI. Yep. I'm just curious if you've thought about this, if there's any modifications to your strategy, how do you make sure you continue to be, you know, on top of these AI-driven questions from investor searches? So yeah. Any quick comments?
Well, it's called paying money to SEO people and people that this is what they do all day long. I found out a long time ago, it's like, why would I ever do the SEO work and the marketing work? That's not what I do. I find hotels and we operate them. So you partner with people that this is their entire job is to get you on the first page. They do newsletters, blogs, we do guest posts in magazines, and they handle all that stuff.
So how many of them you have in Spain right now? I'm just curious of the size of operation.
Similar? It's very small. They're not similar at all. The one is in the mountains of Costa Brava. It's more of a, it's 45 minutes from Barcelona, and it's a summer getaway. It's an hour from France and 45 minutes from Barcelona. So you're just in that part, and it's just that
seasonal hotel. It's heavily seasonal.
This one is more seasonal in the wintertime. And there's a lot of mountain biking and hiking in the area, so people come and do that. Another one is in the Priorat wine region, so it's right in the heart of the vineyards. So they're very different types. One that we're looking at is the castle. Another one we're looking at is the one in the medieval town. The goal is to have a develop the website into a drop-down box, Spain, Italy, Portugal. People will pick. So, you know, instead of trying to get them to a specific property, we'll do the SEO-driven analytics to get them into that to that website. And then they can just drop down and say, where do I want to go?
Yeah, understood. Just curious, now, you know, basic question on what kind of returns these things generate from, you know, projections perspective, what kind of cash flows and, you know, is it a 5-year hold? Are they similar to the US syndication concept? And also, you know, you're buying at a 15 cap. You're probably going to sell it to somebody else, maybe at a 12 cap. I'm using an example. It's not going to be like suddenly you buy at 15 and sell at a 5 cap. It's there's a market for these assets local, and people, you know, they expect these strong returns. Otherwise, why bother with these boutique type of assets? I'm just curious how you basically look at the whole thing.
Yeah. So most of the buyers and sellers are foreign nationals. In Spain, they don't have a lot of, you know, I'm not going to say that, you know, the way that the mindset is, but you don't have a lot of Europeans that buy them. The cash flows, because the expenses, you know, for instance, here in the U.S., my housekeepers make $22 an hour. In these boutiques, we have a husband and wife team. They make about 25,000 euros a year. And then if they need a housekeeper, the going rate for housekeepers run $8.6 euros. So, you know, 9 euros an hour. They make about 16,000 a year. So the expenses are a lot lower. The returns, for instance, this one that we're buying, it's already making 500,000 euros. About a 40% expense ratio right now because he runs his entire life through it. So we're going to cut that. So let's say that it's making 250,000, 300,000 net off of an $800,000 total investment. And the returns are really good. What we've found is that my investors don't really want us to ever sell these. It's a different concept in the U.S. In the U.S., no one's ever told me that, oh, I can't wait to see your Comfort Inn in Topeka. You know, these they want to, like, okay, how much can I invest to get 2 weeks at these properties? And then they say, well, what if I don't want you to sell these? So we came up with this new term. It's more of like a lifestyle investment where, because interest rates are so low, we're buying these in cash. We're waiting about 3 years. We refinance them at 2.7%. Then we use that money and buy another one. And right now, the investors that I'm talking to, it's like, Mike, I want you to hold on to these for 10 years, 12 years. I want to be able to go vacation with them. I want to be able to have a glass of wine in this castle and say, you know what? I actually own a part of this. So it's more of a vacation lifestyle type of investment than just a regular box hotel here in the U.S.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So you're looking for even a niche investor, not a money investor in essence. You're looking for sort of a strategic value investor. They can claim that they own a piece of it. And the very long time horizon is almost counterintuitive. It's almost like some people actually want to know that this thing is going to have an exit strategy versus you're saying, well, you know, maybe 10 years. At the end of the day, it's... So who controls the decision when to sell? Is it still you?
Well, it's always me, but we have, if ladies and gentlemen, if you looked at the fund, there's three exit strategies. The first one is I can sell as soon as we hit our IRR mark, and we can just say we're going to sell them all. Number two is that 3 to 5 year, usually 3 to 4, depending on what the P&Ls are. You know, they want, in Spain, they want to see 3 to 4 years of P&Ls. At that 3 to 4 year mark, we can, when we refinance, we'll cash out those people that want to exit. If Mike, you were an investor, you wanted to cash out, another Mike was an investor, he'd just buy your shares because he wants to keep it on. So there is a plan. There's a three-stage exit strategy. The second one, we can cash you out when we refinance, and you can go your merry way. And then the third one is those people that want 5 of these, they want 10 of these, and they're getting distributions, they're getting paid, but they get to deduct their European vacations, they get to stay at their asset. One of my investors I had to talk to a couple of days ago wants his daughter to get married at one of the assets. You know, it becomes just more of this vacation, this lifestyle. So we have all different types of investors, those that want to cash out, and we let them in year 3 to 5. But there's a lot of them that just want, look, you know, if I can get distributions and cash flow for the next 10 years and be able to vacation in my own castle and estate, that, you know, that's what they want. So it's different investors.
Understood. So what kind of distributions are you projecting to investors?
On the two that we're getting ready to buy, it's a life cycle IRR of around 21%. And we're expecting year one, it's always a lot lower. I always am conservative at around 8 to 10%. And then it goes up to about a 14%.
Yeah, using the numbers you mentioned, and I don't know what your terms with investors, if you're giving them a pref return or a split, and what that waterfall looks like. Are you able to share that? What kind of, sure. You know, how these deals are structured? I'm just curious how you're approaching. You're finding deep, you know, let's call them deep value, but they require operating, you know, expertise. So it's kind of like, they're almost like operating businesses. It's real estate, but they're operating. And then
it is business. Yeah, hotels. Hotels are both. Hotels are a business that sits on real estate.
Agreed. Yeah. So just curious, how are you splitting cash flows and profits with investors?
Yep. In Europe, it's different than the United States. I am of the mindset, I'm the GP that hates complicated waterfalls. If there's more than two levels, I can't even figure it out. And then in the portal, it's like, going, if this happens and that happens, and if we have 15% IRR, I'm like, well, what in the world is going on here?
Yes, simplicity is easy to understand.
Simplicity. Agreed. So in Europe, I don't even have a pref. I do for the life, 80-20 split. And if I distribute 50,000, investors get 80%. We get 20%. We put it back into the operations because I don't bring anything over in the United States. I just keep it over there. And then a lot of them don't even want the 80%. They want it to be reinvested back in. But in the United States, I'll do a pref and then a split. And it's just none of this IRR stuff. Here's an 8% pref. Then 75-25 or an 80-20. I just want to keep it simple. But because we're not dealing with hundreds of thousands of dollars in distributions on like a $10 or $15 million hotel here, we're talking about, you know, $250,000 net cash, or we're talking about 10 or 20,000 a quarter. Just, you know, they're smaller distributions because of just the size of the boutique. Investors okay with, you know what, it's 80-20 split.
Yeah, it's, listen, I'm not questioning, criticizing this at all. It's just that you wanted to know what it is. And 80-20 split, by the way, it's not unreasonable. We've seen that that structure plenty of times where people, do you take a management fee in addition to the 80-20 split, or the 20% includes your compensation?
No, there's 1%. There's a management fee that goes into being that person that's doing the day-to-day operations, like Vic, that has to go to the asset. You know, he's in Barcelona, he has to travel 45 minutes. So there's a property management fee. And then there's a 1% investor relation fee. And what that does is it helps pay for the people that are on our back end that are doing all the newsletters, all the reports, all the distributions.
So you have an asset management fee, and the asset management fee is fair. People have to keep the lights on, right? You got to be able to give them the reports. You got to be able to update them. And yeah, so I expected worse. Some people, you know,
I don't do worse.
Would take opportunity, you know, 50-50 split, maybe some six pref and 50-50 split, but 80-20 is definitely, you know, reasonable one from investment perspective.
I have these hotels because of the investors. And if I
the
take
amount
care
of
the
capital you need is not that large, by the way. It's like you need small checks. So you need a few very small set of investors who kind of love your strategy and really know, like, and trust you.
Yeah. The hotel in the Priorat wine region, which does very well. It's an elderly lady. She has to sell. She's just a health. We could buy that. It's seven rooms, and we're getting for about €650,000 to €700,000 total. And it has a little restaurant. She does wine tastings, and I'm like, that's cheaper than a lot of our houses, you know, in the U.S.
So, just hearing you out a little bit, were you buying assets, you know, $600,000-$700,000? You're buying an asset, you're $1.5 million. You're basically assembling a portfolio of relatively, you know, not very expensive hotels. You're not paying, you know, $20 million or.
Yeah.
Is it difficult to manage in the different parts of the country? I just wanted to kind of understand. One of the biggest difficulties that I've seen when people do this is management, because you got property here, you got to drive an hour that way, 2 hours this way, you got to fly. It's a lot of complexity related to that.
Yeah, well, that's why we have a team that's full time in Barcelona. If I didn't have that, there's no way that I'd ever be able to manage it.
And so everything is not too far from Barcelona, right? You're basically saying that
everything is within 45 minutes. Everything that we own is within 45 minutes of Barcelona.
Got it.
And so it's very small.
Yeah, I appreciate your explanation. This was very interesting. This is different and definitely unique. How would folks reach out? What's the best way to reach out if they wanted to talk to you, understand more about the strategy, et cetera?
Yeah, websites, Gateway PE is in private equity, gatewaype.com. And you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn, Michael Stoller.
Very cool. I appreciate you sharing. Appreciate you coming on a podcast. Good luck. Enjoy Spain. It's a beautiful country. And it sounds like you found a phenomenal niche. So it sounds like an awesome strategy.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah, I'm heading to Barcelona next weekend for 3 weeks. So it's going to be fun.
Safe travels and enjoy. I appreciate you being on a podcast.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's slot name. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.